हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे हरे। किशोर किशोरी की जय, जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा महारानी की जय, गौर निताय की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we're continuing with Canto 10, chapter 20, and the text for today is text 19, which you can chant responsibly. नारायोपाश्चनः स्वायोचनाराजिथार्गनाय अहं मत्यां पाशिथायां एवापासा पुरुषो यथा नारायोपाश्चनः स्वायोत्सना राजिथार्ज्ञनाय अहं मत्यापसिथायां स्वापासा पुरुषो यथा नारायोपाश्चनः स्वायोत्सना राजनीतार्ज्ञनाय अहं मत्यापसिथायां स्वापासा पुरुषो यथा। प्लीज चांट। नारायोपाश्चनः स्वायोत्सना राजिथार्ज्ञनाय अहं मत्यापसिथायां स्वापासा पुरुषो यथा। नारायोपाश्चनः स्वायोत्सना राजिथार्ज्ञनाय अहं मत्यापसिथायां स्वापासा पुरुषो यथा। नारायोपाश्चनः स्वायोत्सना मत्यापसिथायां स्वापासा पुरुषो यथा। Narada Yodupashana Svayotsna Rajitarganai Ahamatya Pasitaya Svapasa Purushoyata Narada Yodupashana Svayotsna Rajitarganai Amatsya Pasitaya Svapasha Purushoyata. And the word for word for text 19. Nararaya. did not shine forth. Udupa, the moon. Chanaha, covered. Svayotsna, by its own light. Rajitai, which are illuminated. Ganai, by the clouds. Ahamatya, by false ego. Bashitai, which is illuminated. Svabhasa, by his own luster. Purusha, the living entity. Yata, as. And the translation for text 19 and purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illuminated by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illumined by the consciousness of the pure soul. Purport. The analogy given here is excellent. During the rainy season, we cannot see the moon in the sky because the moon is covered by clouds. These clouds, however, are radiant with the glow of the moon's own rays. Similarly, in our conditioned material existence, we cannot directly perceive the soul, because our consciousness is covered by the false ego, which is the false identification with the material world and the material body. Yet, it is the soul's own consciousness that illumines the false ego. As the Gita describes, the energy of the soul is consciousness. And when this consciousness manifests through the screen of false ego, it appears as dull material consciousness in which there is no direct vision of the soul or God. In the material world, even great philosophers ultimately resort to hazy ambiguities when speaking about the absolute truth, just as the cloudy sky manifests only in a dull and indirect way the iridescent light of the moon. In material life, our false ego is often enthusiastic, hopeful, and apparently aware of various material affairs, and such consciousness encourages us to push on in material existence. But in truth, we are merely experiencing the dull reflection of our original pure consciousness, which is Krishna consciousness. Direct perception of the soul and God, not realizing that the false ego merely hampers and dulls our real spiritual consciousness, which is fully enlightened and blissful. We mistakenly think that material consciousness is full of knowledge and happiness. This is comparable to thinking that the luminous clouds are lighting up the night sky, while in fact it is the moonshine that illumines the sky, and the clouds that merely dull and hamper the moonshine. The clouds appear luminous because they are filtering and impeding the brilliant rays of the moon. Similarly, at times, material consciousness appears pleasurable or enlightened because it is screening or filtering the original blissful and enlightened consciousness coming directly from the soul. If we can understand the ingenious analogy given in this verse, we can easily advance in Krishna consciousness. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radha Vrindavanishvari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatsaribhyas Chakripa Sindhubhya Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimataram Padaswami Tinamine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimata Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvichesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I've had a long absence from sitting in this spot, so I'm having to adjust. I had spent 2 weeks in South Africa with my mother leaving her body. And so I was doing kirtan for her, and sometimes I would sing Jai Radha Madhava. So this morning when I was singing Jai Radha Madhava, this sort of melancholy mood came over me because I recalled sitting in that situation. But anyway, it was a very positive situation, and doing kirtan actually made the whole atmosphere very happy. So... So in terms of this verse, I'll just read the translation again because it is quite an intricate analogy. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illumined by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illumined by the consciousness of the pure soul. So the analogy is broken down by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada in the purport. Clouds cover the moon in the sky during the rainy season, because this chapter is dealing with the rainy season in Vrindavan. So that the moon isn't visible because the clouds are covering the moon. And in a similar way, our false ego covers consciousness. In the same way that we can't perceive the moon covered by clouds, so we cannot directly perceive the soul because our consciousness is covered by false ego. So just as the clouds are radiant with the glow of the moon's rays, so too the false ego is illumined by the consciousness of the soul. So it's a very tremendous analogy. Now, when the false ego covers consciousness, there's a symptom that tells you that this is happening. And the symptom that's visible is that the spirit soul thinks of himself as the doer of activities. So when I was in South Africa, I saw somebody that I knew from a long time back, an elderly person who was suffering from emphysema. So when I looked at the symptom of the disease, I could understand that it indicated past abuse of the body. So in the same way, when you actually see a person seeing themselves, seeing himself, herself, as the person who's performing activities, doing activities, and there's that mood, it's a very apparent mood, it's a symptom that the false ego is operating, that the consciousness is actually being covered by false ego. So the person in that, showing that symptom of the false ego being prominent, is actually convinced by the false ego that he's the doer of everything. The ego is that part of the individual, which is what the individual is aware of. So there's an awareness of how one is seeing oneself, or how one's seeing one's activities, or how one is seeing one's capacity. And so introspectively, an individual is aware of and recognizing what's happening externally, or their attitudes. Even on the internal level, the person is aware of their mental state. So this is the ego. There's a kind of reflective quality to the ego. A person sees themselves performing actions, or a person is aware of how they're seeing themselves in relation to actions. So that sort of reflective aspect, that's the ego. And this is very interesting, because a person showing that symptom of the false ego being prominent, particularly their reflective process is such that they're seeing themselves as independently performing everything. And it's called generally, the word is used a lot in Bhagavad Gita particularly, and throughout Srila Prabhupada's lectures, he uses the word becoming bewildered. So there's a kind of bewilderment in that there's actually an inability, because the false ego is so prominent, it's actually blocking any ability to understand that the mechanism of this body, it's actually being produced by material nature. So actually one forgets even that this body is composed of material elements. One forgets that material nature has had a hand in the creation of the body, both gross and subtle. So in fact, the false ego is such that it's actually obliterating the role of material nature, and never mind even being able to comprehend that the body, which was formed from material nature, is actually functioning under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. So the symptom of the ego being so prominent, there's this particular important obliteration that goes along with it. There's actually a complete inability to comprehend that connection with material nature, and that the Lord is actually directly supervising everything done by material nature. So there's a very nice verse in Bhagavad Gita which spells this out. It's 3:27. Prakriti kriyamanam gunai karmani sarvasa ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. So that translates into the spirit soul Bewildered by the influence of the false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So one often hears the expression somebody having a blind spot. You know, you literally cannot see some aspect of yourself. So maybe somebody close to you will say to you, are you aware of the fact that you have this or this behavior? And often one can't even hear somebody's comment about one's particular behavior or one's particular habit because it's something that one is blocked off or not wanting to acknowledge, or maybe it's somehow connected to some difficulty in one's past. But at any rate, one is blocking off something. So it's a similar thing. When the false ego is there, this idea that oneself is responsible, one is doing everything, it goes along with a very big blind spot. One can't connect the body to material nature. One certainly can't even understand that the Supreme Lord is supervising how the body is functioning, how material nature has put everything together. So Srila Baladev Vijaybhusan, he explains that the person who's hopelessly confused, so this is this word bewildered, it's been hopelessly confused by the ego with its mistaken ideas, thinks that he's the doer of all actions, and that word is karmani. Whether those actions are prescribed actions by the Vedas or they're not prescribed actions by the Vedas. So the person who's, like I often get exposed to this, a person who's performing some particular austerity, like when I was living in the Tawaka temple, there used to be an elderly lady. At that time, she wasn't initiated. And she tended to be disapproving of a lot of things. And every now and again, she would undertake the austerity of remaining silent, like not speaking, which clearly was a good austerity for her. If one is seeing oneself as the performer of that austerity, it's also on the false ego plane. And never mind if it's just regular activities of, you know, perhaps being able to meet one's work demands or one's family duties. And again, there's this, as Srila Baladev Vijaybhusan says, these actions are performed by the products, the guna, of the Lord's Maya, in the form of the body, the senses, and the pranas, which are impelled into action. Due to an accident long ago, sometimes I have a little difficulty with prana. So it means the flow of the prana through the body is allowing for, you know, strong movement, for execution of one's activities. Even that prana, that very subtle element, is controlled by the Supreme Lord. So one is oblivious to that with the false ego operating. And there's a reason that a person is thinking like this. And the person, the jivatma or the spirit soul, he actually has a body of knowledge. It's coming with the soul. And so he has a sense of I, of some identity. And he has a sense that actually the spirit soul is the doer because knowledge is already there. And so you can see how it's a very subtle confusion. If that reflective component of how one sees oneself and one's functioning is on the ego plane, then one is identifying with that ego, how one sees oneself. I am a good provider, or I'm an excellent mother, or whatever the case is. There's a confusion that's happened because that sense of our identity, the I factor, is actually something that's coming from the spirit soul. So the spirit soul has a sense of identity, an I, and is actually the doer. But because the ego, that blind spot, is operating, then there's that confusion of identifying with the reflective component. Oh, I'm performing these activities. I am that person who has the capacity to perform these activities. So it's a very subtle thing. This is part of that confusion that comes from the fact that the soul is present, but there isn't an understanding of the soul being present. But nevertheless, it's still operating. It's giving a sense of identity. So this is Srila Baladev Vijayabhusan's explanation. And he explains, this is from Gita Bhushana, he explains how it is that the consciousness is covered. And the consciousness is covered because one is overcome with impressions. And the word is vasana, that have come from enjoying material sense objects from way back. There's a whole history of many lifetimes that one has been enjoying sense objects. So it means that actually, there's impressions that have been left from enjoying those objects. And it's actually, one is overcome with those impressions. So there's some sort of sense of enjoyment because of these impressions. And because of these impressions of enjoyment, this is how Srila Baladev Vijayabhusan, this is his words, one is embraced by Prakrit, or by energy, the energy of nature. Because that nature's energy is situated right next to one. This is how he puts it. actually, material nature is the cause of pleasure. So it's an interesting thing. Somewhere there, there's this impression on the mind, which dictates that one's looking for pleasure of some kind, because one has this long history of enjoying sense objects. And because of these impressions, one then gets embraced by, as Srila Baladev Vijayabhusan puts it, by the nature's energy, which is right next to one. So it's nature which has as its product the false ego. So that's the what is meant by the energy, nature's energy being right next to one. The mind is there with these impressions, and then that reflective component, the false ego, is operating with some sense of, oh, I want pleasure, I'm needing pleasure. Then immediately, the false ego starts to get very prominent. So the false ego is carrying those confused ideas that has one thinking that one is one's material body. So you can see the soul's out of the picture. And that reflective component of the ego, it has one thinking, oh, I'm this material body, I'm looking for pleasure. And so in this way, one thinks that the activities that are accomplished by the Lord and the material body, because remember, that's the source of the material body, nature. Nature's under the control of the Supreme Lord. So it means activities are being accomplished by this material body, which is under the control of material nature, and which is, and material nature is under the control of the Lord. So, so one's thinking that these activities accomplished by the Lord and the material body, by one's senses, and the life is, are being done only by oneself. And Krishna explains this fact that the doership of the Atma is made possible by the body, senses, and the life is. So it's needed. The soul has got a body that allows for that expression through the senses, through the life is. So this is how Krishna puts it. The place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. So it's a very comprehensive picture, actually, what's involved in action. So we touched on the individual with the life is, the pranic life is, the senses, the body, and Krishna expands it to the many different kinds of efforts, and ultimately the sanction of the super soul. It is the soul within the body that is acting to bring about the results of activities. And hence, actually, it's the soul that's the doer. Because remember, consciousness is needed to propel anything. So consciousness propels the body, propels the senses, propels the life is. And the soul is acting in various ways through the instruments of action, which are the senses. So for each action, there's a different endeavor. So naturally, you know, if one is going to cook something, the effort will be to collect ingredients and perhaps follow a recipe, so go through sequential steps in how to assemble those ingredients in order to actually put them on fire and make a comprehensive dish. So that may be different from choosing to study, where the effort will be to focus one's attention on a particular text and think about it very carefully and examine the analogies as we're doing here. So there's a different endeavor. And Paramatma, or the super soul, is in fact the activator of everything. So it means that actually, the cause of everything is the super soul. So there's that desiring part. One desires to perform a particular action. So one has one's body, one's senses, and the particular effort one's going to put in. And the soul is allowing, through the symptom of consciousness, to propel one into action. But actually, the permitter of the action is the super soul. And so he's called, the Supreme Lord is called the super cause. Now, you can see how complex actually everything is compared to that very simplified picture that somebody in this unhappy state of just having this ego conception has failed to take into account all the components that are involved in an action. Now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this is in Sarita Darshini commentary on this particular text that we're studying today, he says that it is this Lord who is not visible, this sanctioner of the activities, who's been hidden by his avidya shakti. So his particular energy that allows for that ego to be there, he puts like an energy of ignorance that prevents one from seeing him. So a person with that symptom of false ego, that sense of doership, who's not taking into account the complexity of performing an action, he's actually prevented directly by the super soul from being able to perceive super soul through this avidya shakti, so the energy of the Lord. This is how Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains it. This avidya shakti arises from super soul himself, just as the moon does not shine being hidden by the clouds. So it's an energy that blocks one In the same way that the moon gets blocked by the clouds from shining. So, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments that this is actually a very good example, this example of how the super soul is using a Vidya Shakti to block the person with the symptom of false ego from even comprehending his presence there, and that in the same way the clouds are blocking the moon from shining forth. This example, he says, is a good example for the gyanis. And so I thought I would look at some of these gyanis, how they're thinking, because generally a gyani is supposed to have some concept of Krishna as the goal, but they're using their mental process to try and come to that understanding. But the gyanis I looked at are those that are putting out so many philosophical books in Western philosophy where they talk about transcendence, but maybe they don't have a concept of God or Krishna. So there's, when I was studying philosophy, there was a particular contemporary philosopher that was, in the same way that we go through our disciplic succession, the Western philosophers take into account all the previous development of argument, mental argument, and then add their part to it in their analysis. So there's a woman called Arendt, and she's referencing both Descartes and some contemporary philosopher called Husserl. And this Husserl that she's referencing, he says that there's an intentionality in all acts of consciousness. So this is very interesting because we're hearing that there's a performer of action and super souls are permitted. And these are persons who are not acknowledging at all and have no idea of, as Krishna's put it, this very comprehensive breakdown of what one action constitutes. So at any rate, there's acknowledgement that there's some intentionality in an act of consciousness. And Descartes, he had a concern for what he called the thinking ego. So this is how he put it. He equated the thinking ego with the soul. So interesting. The power of thought, because this is the gyani, the intellect is extremely important. So they're not actually thinking, making a distinction between ego and intelligence. So hence, they're calling intelligence, thinking ego, because they're identifying with their intelligence. And so they equate it with the soul because they see there's a certain power and there's ability to think ideas through. And he saw this thinking ego, which he's equating with the soul, as he puts it, and he says that that reality, you know, can't be doubted. There has to be a soul, this thinking ego. I mean, there's that confusion. The soul and the ego, the thinking ego, gets bound together in from Descartes' point of view. And he says that this exists beyond the illusion of sense perception, because there's understanding that the senses, you know, bring about some illusion. You know, there's some faulty aspect. But he thinks that the thinking ego, this intelligence, this capacity to think, the soul, as he equates it with the soul, is actually even beyond the power of an all-powerful. So you can see there's a direct challenge with Krishna, that the superiority of this thinking ego, this soul, that is not even under the control of an all-powerful being. So it's a direct challenge. I mean, the atheistic view. and this point that the ego can actually, or the power can be beyond the power of an all-powerful being, is actually addressed in Bhagavad Gita 18:16. Srila Prabhupada puts it this way, and he doesn't waste words. I mean, you can see how a person who's not understanding the breakdown of action and is therefore oblivious really to the existence of the soul can have this kind of mental confusion that the ego, the thinking ego, it's called, is the same as the soul. Srila Prabhupada puts it this way, his words, Srila Prabhupada. A foolish person cannot understand that the super soul is sitting as a friend within and conducting his actions. Can't see it, just not possible. Because the ego is so big. I mean, even the fact that it's the Descartes put it in terms of the thinking ego is holding on to it, it's so great. So Lord Krishna states, therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. So Krishna's just smashed Descartes. So this is from Bhagavad Gita 18:16, Krishna's words. So Gyanis may see material causes, for example, Descartes, and that everything that appears is perceived. hence, you could say, you know, you can perceive something that's present there. but appearance as such carries with it, this is Descartes, as some indication of realness. So whatever you're perceiving, that has to be real. And because other people around you can also see that, that's what makes it real. This is how it's explained. So not taking into account the fact that that reflective component, the ego, can actually be bewildering one, making one very slanted in one's view. So let's say this diseased person that I mentioned when visiting my country of birth, the person was just able to see the very realness of the current illness. But the ego part, the reflective component, could acknowledge that actually the illness is the cause of previous activities that were done, perhaps too much smoking, never mentioned at all. So this is how the ego operates. I'm a healthy being. I'm very healthy. So now that I'm sick, oh, well, no connection with the activities that brought about the sickness. Because I'm healthy. I identify with my body. My body is a healthy body. So can stand abuses as I wish. So in some sense, the breakdown of the Gyanis, like Descartes, you could say that it's consciousness through the screen of false ego. They're looking with false ego. So the might of thinking is prominent, but it's actually dull material consciousness. So even all the grappling with concepts, it's still very dull material consciousness because it's not been illumined by the soul, because there's no acknowledgement in that activity, that particular endeavor of trying to analyze the way that thinking is making sense of the world. It's not acknowledging the senses fully themselves. It's not acknowledging the sanction of the Supreme Lord that's permitting that activity to be performed. There's no concept of the Supreme Lord, and that we understand has been created by the Supreme Lord, that they cannot see him because there is that ego operating in such a powerful way. So in this purport, there's mention that we mistakenly think that material consciousness is full of knowledge and happiness. But it is our spiritual consciousness which is fully enlightened and blissful. And this is those three verses following one upon the other in the 18th chapter. So Bhagavad Gita 18:18. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. So very interesting. The ultimate position of being in blissful, enlightened consciousness, coming directly from the soul, is one in which one knows that the instruments of work, himself as the worker and the Supreme Lord as the sanctioner, is perfect in his actions. So when one has that understanding, every action one performs is perfect. And this is part of the beauty and the satisfaction in Krishna consciousness. Operating with that understanding, even simple actions, like I regularly have to cook a meal, there's a sense of completion and everything is perfect because there's an understanding that there was that sanction of the Supreme Lord, the endeavor I performed, the usage of my senses for his pleasure. It makes the whole action completely perfect. And so one who's acting in Krishna consciousness, under the direction of Super Soul, even if their action is one of killing, which is in the case of Arjuna, which was his duty, so his duty wasn't cooking, his duty was killing on the battlefield, he's in fact not killing because it's from the with the sanction of Super Soul. So it means that he's not affected by any reaction. The wise person is the person who has the power to think, knowing that his action is dependent on the Lord. It's absolutely essential to have that understanding. So one doesn't think that he's the only doer. And in addition, his intelligence is not contaminated by desires for the results of his actions. So you can see that even philosophers, the gyanis, have this problem. They think they're the only doer, and their intelligence is such that they're looking for results for their actions. That sense of perhaps academic pleasure that they've now hit upon a point that the previous philosopher didn't hit upon, so, or had developed something from previous philosophers. So those are some thoughts on this particular analogy in this verse dealing with the rainy season in Vrindavan. Particularly as it's related to the ego obscuring one's pure consciousness or the soul. So if there's any comments or thoughts.
I just had a quick connection. I was just thinking when you were like touching on the point of how we mistakenly think that we're the doer in certain endeavors that we do, whether it's like a physical activity or a mental activity, anything that we do, but there's actually so many other processes behind it, and then ultimately Krishna is the one that's sanctioning stuff, and he's giving us the facility to do that action. And so I just like think of like a very like simple like example of like how a little kid, he'll see his parent like lifting weights. And so he'll like walk up to like this like big like 100-pound weight, and from behind him, the father is actually picking up the weight, but the kid is thinking mistakenly that he's the one that's actually lifting it. He's very proud that he's able to lift these weights. So I was thinking like that.
Oh, that's a very charming example. Thank you.
And I concur with Prabhu's in your class that the most essential factor is Krishna's sanction in anything we do. Sometimes we forget that many times, and when I was meditating on this verse, this is an observation. We see throughout the scriptures, people who are influenced by the false ego are devoted to being the principle Those who are influenced by the soul are devoted to having principles. And since Govardhan Lila is coming up, I know Adam, you probably appreciate that phrase. Govardhan Lila is coming up. We see that Indra, he was devoted to being the principal. I'm right, and the residents of Vrindavan are wrong. But why was he miserable? He didn't have principles. So that's one lesson I take in my Krishna Khan. What is the use of being the principal if we're miserable because we don't have principles? And so we see Indra, because he thought he was a principal, let me kill the residents of Vrindavan. So he thought he had control. He was the supreme controller because he thought he had control over who lives and who dies. And we may not, in our lives, we may not try to kill others, but sometimes we think we have control over whose reputation lives and whose reputation dies. Why? Because we're influenced by the false ego. And so there's a nice quote. It says, as long as a word remains unspoken, you are its master. As soon as you utter it, you are its slave. And we see that only Krishna could say and do anything he wants because he's the supreme controller. But we have to be very mindful, vacho vegam, mano vegam. Be very careful of our thoughts and words. So my question is that sometimes in our devotional practices, we think nobody can see me slandering others in secret. Oh, you shouldn't associate with that devotee. Da, 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 da. But then what is the criteria for us committing aparad? Because we see in a Ramachandra Puri pastime, his guru aparad, he couldn't see any good in the Vaishnavas. All he would go around is just finding fault with others. And that's the result of Vaishnava Parag, Guru Aparag. So sometimes we may think, I'm right, I'm wrong. So how can we are there any other determining factors of us committing offenses because we think we're the principal, we're the supreme controller? Are there any other, or maybe you could expand on this one thing as a result of committing aparads? We can't see any good in the Vaishnavas. We just see good in others in the material world that they're a part and parcel of Krishna. So anyway, those are some of my points. Maybe you could.
Okay, so that's... I take it the implication from how you started is that the fundamental thing has to be that one's operating with principles, because that allows for good conduct. So, and in fact, you brought up a particular principle, the one of being very cautious in terms of one's thinking and one's words, and particularly in the association of devotees. So, what you were particularly concerned with is how is it that one can manage this particular perhaps tendency that one wants to slander persons around one or ruin their reputation, and so implying that principle of being very attentive to one's thinking and one's words is kind of being jeopardized. Well, let's say the false ego is operating, and the false ego tells one that in order for one to be in a secure, comfortable, prominent position, it's necessary for one to it may be that the false ego is operating where it's necessary, in order for one to shine well, it's necessary to put others, to cast a dim light on others. So that would be how the false ego is thinking or operating. So if one finds oneself in a position where the that kind of one is under the sway of the false ego, then it's necessary to actually examine oneself. So one of the factors of action is the performer. So if one is observing oneself performing this action of slandering others or speaking ill of others with the intention of ruining reputation, then one has to actually take into account, oh, would Super Soul be sanctioning this? So is one even thinking that Super Soul's present? Is one actually operating, and how one understands the sanction of Super Soul is if it's in line with scriptures. So since you highlighted the particular principle of actually being very attentive to one's words and one's thoughts, and one recognizes these are not positive words, or the thoughts I'm having are not positive, and they're looking to destroy others, then one would have to certainly say, okay, I'm not taking Super Soul into account. I'm at the mercy of false ego. So you have to regroup yourself. You have to regroup everything. And I mean, the false ego operates such that, you know, it's a blind spot. You know, what one wants to believe or what one thinks is necessary, one will pursue that. But if, you know, one is still able to monitor, then that's a very good thing. So then one has to regroup and certainly try to end that particular tendency and sort of put oneself in the correct position of, you know, the purpose of my existence is to serve the Supreme Lord and serve the devotees. So, you know, my tongue doesn't want to serve, so I'm going to be silent, just like the elderly lady in Tawaka. She probably understood that everything she said had some critical component. It was too much spinach is being used. We are wasting too much water, whatever it was. Her husband was doing finances. So she would undertake a vow of mona vrata, so she wouldn't speak for whatever length of time. So, you know, you might see her and you might acknowledge her, but her lips would be sealed. So it's that kind of thing. You actually have to be attentive to using the body in a way that's in line with serving and pleasing. So otherwise one is in false ego space, so just regroup yourself. You know, take a step back, regroup things. So it's very good that at least one can observe. So if there's nothing else, thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.